This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The defense called two witnesses on day 7 of Mario Fernandez's murder trial in Jacksonville. The murder trial that focuses on Jared Bridegain and his involvement in it. He's up first. Shanna Gardner is up next, and we'll, of course, be following that for you. It's like the amuse-bouche, if you will, the appetizer of the trials. Although very real consequences that will affect Mario for the rest of his life, depending on what the jury decides. And I'm curious to get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. If you're not already taking our show with you on the road or in your AirPods or whatever, I do highly suggest taking the audio version with you. The link is right there. The QR code is on the screen. I'll take you to our link tree where you can pick your favorite podcast player, whether it's Android or Apple, and take us along. We do appreciate that. All right. So, big day. Day 7. And pretty much the end of his trial as we get here, as it goes to a jury. Two school teachers from the Discovery School in Jacksonville Beach both said Fernandez was an involved parent who showed up to school events, attended conferences, and helped raise the children he and Shanna Gardner shared custody of with Jared Bridegain. And the defense rested. That's a defense that's betting that the prosecution did not lay enough ground for a conviction, or they just know nothing we are going to say is going to improve the odds. One of those teachers, Lauren Meredith, had also met Bridegain. She described him at a school open house as almost condescending, asking what was so special about the school. Meredith testified that after Fernandez and Gardner began separating, Fernandez stopped doing anything with the children. Gardner pulled the kids from the school and moved them to Washington State a few months after Bridegain was killed. That was the defense's entire case. Two character witnesses and a portrait of a family that functioned until it fell apart. Judge London Kite brought Fernandez before the bench and walked him through his rights. She explained the presumption of innocence, the state's burden of proof, and his right to remain silent. She asked what he wanted to do. Fernandez told the judge he did not want to testify. The decision, he said, was his alone. Both sides delivered closing arguments the same afternoon. The prosecution got a rebuttal. Jury instructions are on the way now. Then deliberations. 7 days of testimony ended with two lawyers standing in front of 12 people and asking them to believe completely different versions of the same evidence. Where do you stand on this? Your thoughts I'd love in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Assistant State Attorney Christina Stifler opened the prosecution's closing with three words on the screen: motive, means, and opportunity. Henry Tenen, the alleged gunman, had none of them. Stifler told the jury, Fernandez, the man actually on trial, had all three. Tenen had never met Bridegain. He had no stake in the custody dispute, no financial interest in Gardner's trust, no connection to the victim's family. The only link between the man who allegedly pulled the trigger and the man who died was Mario Fernandez. The sharpest collision came over money. Defense attorney Jesse Dreischer told the jury he almost fell out of his chair during the prosecution's closing that morning. He said Stifler had told the jury that Fernandez transferred $50,000 from Shanna Gardner's account to his personal account a week after Bridegain's death. Dreischer said it didn't happen. He walked the jury back through the financial testimony from Detective Chris Johns. The records, Dreischer said, showed only two small transfers, not a 50 grand move. He reminded them that Johns, under cross-examination, confirmed he couldn't say the money went to Fernandez. Whether the jury heard Stifler say what Dreischer quoted her as saying, and whether the financial exploits support one version or the other, is now a question 12 people will answer with those records sitting in front of them. The second collision was structural. Stifler's closing built the prosecution's case two ways. In one stretch, she told the jury that evidence showed Fernandez got into Tenen's blue F-150 and showed the gunman where to go. In another, she described Fernandez as the architect of crime, the kind of man who hires people and keeps his distance. Drescher asked the jury directly, which is it? Was Fernandez in the truck, or is he the architect who never gets his hands dirty? Both theories can't be true, Drescher said. The reason the prosecution offered both is that they don't actually know what happened. They don't know who was in the truck with Tenen. They don't know the mechanics of how the killing was arranged. The prosecution's answer came in rebuttal. Assistant State Attorney Alan Misery told the jury that nobody saw Tenen do it either. There were no eyewitnesses to the crime at all. The case against the alleged gunman is also built on circumstantial evidence. DNA on the tire, surveillance footage, the truck, the circumstantial evidence was enough to identify who pulled the trigger, Ms. Ra argued. Should be enough to identify who hired him, right? That's the problem they're running into. Ms. Ra ran through the evidence thread by thread. Fernandez's phone went dark during the hour of the murder, despite a usage pattern that showed should have been active. He wiped the phone a week after Tenen was arrested. Three checks with handwritten memo lines went from his business to the alleged gunman after the killing. The trust clause tied Shanna Gardner's money to the end of her legal entanglements with Breitigan. Fernandez visited the man who once owned a 10-millimeter Glock 3 weeks before the murder. Tenen drove the route Breitigan took home in what prosecutors described as a practice run. Ms. Rai asked the jury how Tenen could have known the darkest stretch of road in the area without someone showing him where to go. He's either the unluckiest man on the face of the earth, Ms. Rai told the jury, or he's guilty. Stifler added a detail the prosecution had been building towards all trial. After police announced Tenen's arrest, Fernandez never called Shanna, the man whose wife's ex-husband had been murdered by his own tenant. Never picked up the phone to tell her, hey, they caught the killer. Stifler told the jury the reason was simple. He already knew. As Rye pointed to Fernandez's early interview with detectives as further evidence, he called it not even an interview. Police asked four or five questions and Fernandez talked for the rest of the session. He volunteered details about the marriage, the custody arrangement, and the family schedule without being asked. The defense's counter ran through the same threads and pulled each one apart. The phone gap, no evidence. Fernandez left his home that night. The phone wipe, he got a new phone the same day. Drescher said everyone wipes their phone when they switch devices. Again, it does happen. Did it happen at a very unopportune time that looks suspicious? Might have. Again, it's the preponderance of all of the evidence as a whole that we're really looking at here. The gun, 6 10-millimeter Glock sold at one pawn shop near the time of the killing, and investigators never followed up to see if any connected to Fernandez or Tenen. The lead detective is working his first homicide and now does the job part-time while working in finance. Investigators never searched Jimmy Jones' house, where the blue F-150 was eventually found. Drescher reminded the jury that John Bickerstaff, the man investigators believe once held the murder weapon, was the prosecution's witness, not his. I asked John Bickerstaff every way I knew how, whether he gave that firearm to Fernandez, Drescher said. I even tried to trip him up, and he continued to say no. Prosecutors brought him in to testify. Drescher argued, and now they're faulting the defense for trusting their own witnesses' answers. When the prosecution suggested Fernandez tried to flee after the murder, Drescher pointed out where Fernandez actually went, Pittsburgh. I don't know who flees to Pittsburgh, he told the jury. Then Drescher played a recorded phone call. Carlos Sonny Fong, an associate of Fernandez, who called him 11 months after the murder, a call Fernandez didn't know was being recorded on the tape. Fernandez praised Tenen's handyman work and said $3,000 was too much to pay for landscaping. Drescher told the jury the phone call was the most consistent piece of evidence that the checks were for legitimate work, not a killing. Drescher finished with the one person the jury never heard from. Henry Tennant is not dead, he told the jury. He's alive and well. You just didn't hear any evidence from him. Stifler's answer to every gap the defense identified was the same. This was almost the perfect crime. No text between Fernandez and Tennant about the murder because Fernandez deleted them. No DNA at the scene because he hired someone else to do it. No surveillance of Fernandez near the shooting because the entire point of hiring someone is not being there. How can I show you evidence of text between Mario and Henry? Stifler asked the jury when the defendant deleted them. That argument asked the jury to treat the absence of evidence as proof of a cover-up and asked them to believe that what was deleted was incriminating, even though nobody can say what it actually was. It asked 12 people to convict on the theory that if the crime happened and this man is connected to the people involved, the orchestration must have happened too. The defense's version of the same facts, the evidence isn't hidden, it was never there. Stifler closed by telling the jury that Fernandez is the thread running through the entire tapestry. Find him guilty as charged, Drescher closed by telling the jury that Fernandez is innocent and he got wrapped up in something he knew nothing about. As Roy got the last word, he asked whether Fernandez gets to walk away because Tenon was a Fifth Amendment right, whether he gets to walk away because he paid someone else to do the killing. This defendant is not the unluckiest man on the face of the earth, Mizrahi told the jury. He's just guilty. Jury instructions are coming, and 12 people are going to figure out, at least in their opinions, whether he is guilty or not. What do you think? Did they bring it? Is there enough here? Or is this one where you can't quite get there? Not because it doesn't all stack up and really, really look like it, but because beyond a reasonable doubt, this doesn't quite get us there. I don't know. I'm curious to get your thoughts. Comment section, links are in the description. Take our podcast with you. QR code is right there. We'll continue our conversation in the comment section. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.